moment on, I'm just going to plug in and use wired headphones because I don't need to hear myself particularly well. But other people need to hear me and not have this like crisis of, you know, audio. So that's why I don't wear, I've got a decent set of headphones, but I don't wear them for the show because I have no confidence, basically. That's the situation.
Yeah, I'm a girl, like, you know, accessories. So.
Yeah, well, you know what? I might have to bite the bullet because I think I lack credibility using these things. It's damaging, you know, probably my brand. Anyway, we're live, everybody. And, you know, we're just talking about being an amateur doing this show. And I've embraced the amateur sort of enthusiast kind of role. But it might be time to grow up, you know. It might be time I need a better background or something. You know, maybe I should get a proper setup. Because, Ala, you're shaming me with your, you know, your gamer seat there, your great headset. You know, you're completely set up. And here I am sitting. You don't even know what I'm sitting on right now.
do we want to know?
it's just a chair, but it's like by no means cool, you know. Anyway, we're live, everybody. So welcome to Brain Food Live on Air. It's episode 95, and I'm super excited today because it is the final episode of our amazing mini series from a developer's point of view. And again, for the people who aren't familiar with the idea. We came up with this brainwave of just bringing on some of the people that we really love to recruit but struggle to do so, get the developers on stage, let them have a conversation with us about what recruiter behavior is, what recruiters do, and then see what they think of that. And maybe we can learn something about, you know, the impact of recruiter behavior and perhaps potentially, you know, do things better. So we've talked about messaging, we've talked about tech assessments, we talked about interviews the last time we did this, and today we're going to be talking about onboarding. So it's going to be super exciting. Quick word to our sponsors though before we kick off. Our sponsors this week are VanHack. VanHack are a hiring platform that helps you relocate software engineers. So if you're hiring people and you want to move them about, or you think that there's a great source site that you know of great developers, and you want to tap into that market and have an organization handle things like the relocate and the logistics and all that type of stuff of getting people over to your office or over to your location, VanHack are a business to check out. 180,000 registered developers on there. So super exciting platform to take part in. I've just shared the link in the stream there. Quick one before we kick off. Soundcheck and AV as usual. So we are multicasting on Crowdcast, LinkedIn Live, and Facebook Live, and Periscope. So people on Crowdcast, if you can hear me okay, can you quickly just say, hey, yes, Hung, I can hear you. Just on the chat stream there, that would be very useful to know whether everything's working. LinkedIn actually came live for us last week again, so thank you, LinkedIn. But I'm still lacking confidence there. So if you can hear me on LinkedIn, can you please say hello? Give me a like, a dislike, a curious. It doesn't matter. I just need to know whether you're there and you can hear me okay. And finally, on Facebook, we should be live there. I can see myself, so I hope I am. But yeah, if anybody watching on Facebook, let me know. Give me a thumbs up, thumbs down, and we'll be good. Okay, we seem to be getting some responses there. That's all fantastic. Okay, fantastic stuff. I'm super excited as well because Ala Pavlova is joining me as co-host today. And you know what, Ala, you're not only an upgrade one time, you're like two upgrades because Ilya Brodsky was meant to be doing this, and he's an upgrade on Adam Gordon. But Ilya, you know what? He needs his beauty sleep. I totally get it. His baby. Unfortunately, he had a rough night last night. So I've told him, hey, listen, you need to get some rest. So he's out of it. And Ala, you're stepping in and upgrading both of those guys. So welcome to the show. Great to see you, Ala.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you.
Ala, you might as well introduce yourself, actually. I think people kind of know who you are, but it'd be useful, I think, for the people who don't. Who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, of course. Hey, everyone. So, yeah, my name is Ala. I'm an interim tech recruiter at Nero right now, but I also help Gamehouse. It's a gaming company. So that's why I have a gaming chair, because this is my other side of life. So, I'm based in Amsterdam and been recruiting for around 13 years. And I'm also a sourcer, so I love doing that. And I had the chance to talk to Ilya, and I know a little bit the VanHack as a community. So I would like to to probably put some words about them. So these guys in 3 years hired 600 of engineers, and I also added the link to the YouTube. So they provide so much content for their community. That is amazing. So you can learn how to present yourself, the cultural differences, how to apply in Europe, how to apply in Canada. So I think it's super helpful because there are some different rules in there.
You know what? It's also very interesting because developers from different parts of the world have firstly a different relationship with recruiters and a different relationship with the concept of, you know, adverts and stuff like that. They just behave differently. So, you know, when we're recruiting very much in our own microcosm, you in Amsterdam, I'm sure that everyone knows what it's like to recruit an Amsterdam developer, right? It's like complete chaos, too much demand. It's a mess. But that's a totally different conversation you might need to have if the person was in Manila, let's say, or in, you know, different country that you've not got any experience on. So I think VanHack really do a great job of bridging those gaps. And in fact, the community aspect, I think, is definitely their strongest suit. You know, I mean, their ability to cultivate community as platform as community seems to be, you know, a new way of thinking about business. So exciting direction that they're in. Anyway, before we kick off, Ala, let's talk about Brain Food. Did you read the newsletter last week? And if so, what was interesting about it?
Yeah, that's a nice habit. I think lots of people have Sunday morning. So yeah, I actually have one article that is particularly standing out. So one of my favorites, I'm going to share it straight away in the chat as well. So it's about focusing on the storytelling. So some crazy focus on storytelling from the CEO of the companies. So let me share that. So I love this one because as a recruiter, of course, I would like to tell the candidates what is going to happen if he or she is going to join the company. But I like when it's coming from the top of the company, when the CEO of the company is thinking like, hey, what is the outside of my values? Like not only focusing on the mission and values, but what is the story behind? So I love to tell the candidates that like, hey, it started at this city, it was three people, and then they moved to the United States, a dream came true, so they've got investors, and now it's like, you know, hundreds of type of company. So I like that this article a lot. So it's very like inspirational in terms of the approaches you can take. And I think storytelling right now is very powerful because we spend so much time on the screen. So, and I think seeing the videos with people, like put the video behind, you know, the text.
You know what, with storytelling, it's like it's becoming so obvious as well that storytelling is like we believe stories more than we believe facts. I mean, that's the sorry truth of it. You know, if you're able to kind of have an if a narrative basically has explanatory power, it satisfies a human being's need to have a complete answer to a problem. And we've seen sort of, for good and bad reasons, you know, we've seen like great narrators and great storytellers really move things because they're able to present this image in this way. And I think that post was particularly powerful because it does go to show that you can't just do like a benefit sell when you're talking about your job or your company. You can't just say, hey, the stock options are this or the salary is that. That's like, as of course, you know, the person's going to check that anyway. You need to have the ability to articulate the wider reasons why. You know, this is the reason for the business to be. So that's a must-read post. First Round, by the way, are an amazing company. Well, they're an amazing content engine, even though that's not what they do. Obviously, they're a VC type organization, but they really pay attention to producing great content. And their blog has been one of the best for a long time. I particularly like this post as well, by the way, folks, because they were adopting what were ostensibly external marketing techniques and then turning internally for internal communications. Like, how do we use storytelling not only to promote the business, but also to do culture building internally? So lots to dig in there. I'm going to try and get is it Daniel or David? I forget his name. I'm going to try and get him on Brain Food Live because I think we need to do a storytelling show. And that would be cool to be part of, if we can get him to come and talk with us and share what he knows. Anyway, a cool one to check out. What else, Ala, what else is interesting last week?
Yes, I'm going to send it in the chat as well. So, of course, as a like, half of my time goes to sourcing. I'm very curious about everything that is happening in this field. And I'm super agreeing with this article that's, you know, sourcing just becoming like a new DNA for a recruiter. That's just a part of it. So it should probably be very separate, like sourcing is done by only that type of, you know, professionals, and recruitments should not include. So I think it's very together. And yeah, so I like that. So to see this confirmation of my thoughts in this article.
I disagreed with Balash's conclusion on this, though, because, by the way, it's a really interesting bit of write-up of a great bit of research done by Andre Bradshaw, whose video, by the way, I'm going to promote in Brain Food in a couple of weeks. He's done a YouTube video on this. Essentially, what he did was scrape LinkedIn for the term sourcer and do like a time kind of plot as to how often that term appeared on these profiles. And by that, the idea was you could track the evolution of the job over time. And it seemed that obviously sourcing didn't exist at some point. Then it started to exist and it peaked around about 2018-19, I think. Sort of Balash's view as to why it kind of maybe be declining in terms of the prominence of the term is because it's become like accepted as a mainstream activity of a recruiter, and like, why, you know, of course this person would be a sourcer, right? So that was his conclusion. Another conclusion, which is one I've got more sympathy with, is probably the idea of sourcing being a separate role to recruiters, which was something that I think was happening as a movement for the last 10 years or so. That may be coming to a close, because even pre-COVID, the requirement really had shifted from just finding people to the need to actually engage with the people you found. And we saw a lot more content about engagement, about how to write a great message. You've been great at that, Ala, actually, with a lot of the stuff you've been doing. So then suddenly, okay, you're talking about a source who also does engagement. Then hang on, you know, why is that just not a recruiter then? I think the function is going to fall back into recruiting rather than it as a separate thing. Thanks for sharing that as well, Aaron. So another thing that Andre does, he's trying to set up his own business as this kind of community support person, and he's trying to do it all on Patreon, so donation only. Really radical, he's kind of a radical experimenter with the future of work. But if you like what he's doing, then definitely pop onto Patreon and send him some money. You know, his value is certainly right up there. Okay, one more, Ala, before we start bringing our guests on.
Yeah, sure. By the way, we all could have a little bit different opinions between the sources and the recruiters, but I think that's at the end of the day. So the technology is evolving, so hopefully there's some like routine part of the sourcing is going to be optimized. I think it's everyone's kind of hoping for that. So, and the last one that I wanted to share with you, that was one of the most curious ones, because as an interim recruiter, I quite often asked, the company's asking me, so where should we open the next office? So where would be like, you know, the market more attractive for the engineers? What is the situation with the country legislation for expats, etc.? So this tool is not particularly for that, but it's about the competition. It's about to look at the country specifics. So and I really to see this trends and rotations of the talents. I'm still playing with that, so I thought that's it's very interesting.
It is. And I actually didn't know that this study was going for like 7 years or so. So I'm so far behind the time. Someone shared this with me, Ivan Harrison, actually. So Ivan, thank you for this. But it's actually a really cool site. And the idea is, look, AI is going to change the world of work. Which country, cities, and companies are best positioned to take advantage of how that future of work looks like? And it's just a great way to do some filtering, some drop downs. You can kind of see, everyone likes to see your country on a lead table or whatever. Switzerland at the top for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe there's a reason for that. I don't know. Low taxation.
Have you been there?
I have. And I've got many friends in Switzerland. I like Switzerland, but I had one bad experience in Geneva. Oh. And that's kind of like colored my expectations a little bit. But Irrational kind of thinking there. But it's interesting to know, like, why would a country be ranked in this way? And again, useful if you're now in the international recruiter, which of course we all are now, if we're shifting things to remote work, for instance, if that's the new world we have to deal with, then research of this type, talent intelligence research of this type is super, super relevant. So it's one to bookmark, folks. It's not like you sit there, you read it and dump it. You need to keep hold of this report, stroke interactive. Okay, great. Let's talk about the topic at hand, which is developer onboarding. Ala, what do you think of this? What do recruiters do badly? What do recruiters do well? I'll ask you this question before I bring our devs on screen.
Yeah, I was actually, before the show, I was also Googling what are the stories from the most engineers about the bad onboarding experience. And most of the stories I've heard were when the things went completely wrong. You know, the day they join, the email is not set up. There is no, interaction with the team, no meetings scheduled and this kind of thing. So to be honest, I was always thinking like tools are going to help us to make the onboarding smooth. But I was very wrong because to leave the person with a tool where you need to fill in the forms and, you know, to put a lot of information yourself and this kind of thing. So they're not that much attractive. So I think as a recruiter, so I know the candidate very well during the interview process. And it's very crucial for me to leave this information somewhere stored for the next person who is going to onboard, because most of the time it's picking up by IT and HR. You know, but I like to know what is happening after, because especially if it was a hard close, you know, when you did your best to make an offer and then, you know, you send this candidate to the HR and something is happening like a black box. So onboarding most of the times, this is something that is like a company effort. You can do the video contract. I think you've been sharing that. I'm going to, guys, add this link so you can send like a video how to read your contract, especially for expats. So they don't know local legislation. So they will have more questions than the local candidates. So yeah, I think it's a super important topic. And I don't think from recruitment part, we are that much engaged, but the part when we can share the learnings that we've got through the interview process, that is super important.
Yeah, that's a really important point, Ala, because what you're saying is there is a handover. And I think that's one of the problems, isn't there? Because recruiters, you tell me, do your mind switches off when the person says yes and you know, job offered, accepted, boom, and then you're on to the next job because we're busy. We've got loads of things to do. It's going to be one job filled out of the 50 that we might have. So, of course, we're going to start thinking about other things. And even before then, I remember back in my recruiting days, if you had a candidate and he or she was going through the flow and you thought this is going in, it's going to be fine, inevitably your attention shifts to other bits of work that you need to do. So number one, we have to recognize as a handover, but the candidate doesn't know that. I mean, the candidate doesn't know how it works on the background. They're just marching through the process. And then suddenly there's like a context switch or a person switch, and it's somebody else emailing them. And I kind of have a think about yourself, like when you're dealing with somebody over a period of time and then suddenly that person is no longer there and another individual is interacting with you, that straight away is quite disturbing. So we need to recognize there is a handover, a natural handover, but the candidate may not know that. And secondly, the value that a recruiter might have obviously is this intense knowledge by that time of the motivation, the style, the communication style of the person, the key concerns that individual might have, which again, HR, hiring manager, they're going to be more distant to that and they don't really know, but they need to be aware. And I'm sure hiring managers actually would really want to know this, because they're going to want this individual new team member to come in and join and be, you know, ready to go day one and not have these concerns. But yeah, definitely there's a gap. There's an ownership problem as well. We'll talk about that a bit later when we get people like Joshua and Jesse on, but like who owns it? Not clear. When that's not clear, typically it's a bit of a mess. I mean, I do remember back in my early days, again, people arriving, no computer setup. There was a day spent. We didn't have any. I had to just pull an engineer off to what their job was. Listen, I need you to sit with Jake for 2 hours. And it's like, there's like two people gone, and it's just a terrible impression. And you know, there's damage to confidence from the candidate point of view.
Because, yeah, I wanted
to, go ahead.
So I wanted to add one more thing. It's also, you know, it's important to keep the promises. So I when we interact with the candidates, so we promise them, for example, if there's some special circumstances, right? So that's there will be like a contract, permanent contract after 12 months, or they're going to be like, you know, his salary will be revisited, etc. So if these promises are not kept in the later stages, so I had so many times candidates coming back to me saying, hey, when I spoke with you, so you told me it's possible. It's such a horrible experience. I feel so bad when it's happening.
Yeah, you know what? It's totally true. And the truth is, recruiters are a little bit responsible for it, but not always. Because oftentimes we're operating under information that wasn't there. I remember referrals was one of the things that was promised. But one of my old CEOs promised me, yeah, we're going to give 5K referrals to anybody who refers anything. And then, you know, I was saying, oh, great, I can go to my engineering team and have them do this. And every new hire I made, I said, hey, listen, if you know anybody else who had this skill set wants to join the crew, here's what we can do. Then, of course, the 5K wasn't there. It was like not available. And of course, you get complaints because you have, you know, misled them even inadvertently. So it's important. Our relationship with hiring managers there is super important. Okay, let's move on. Let's bring on, I think Ming Ho is definitely here. Kritika might not be with us, unfortunately. I'm going to see if she is and we'll bring her on. Let's bring Ming Ho Chang on at the very least. I hope she's not in a noodle shop again. I think that was the last time she was... We interrupted her dinner, I think.
In the office, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think Kritika is here, but that's okay. Let's talk to Ming Ho and get a developer's perspective on this. Because, you know what, it's going to be variable as well. I'd be interested to know, actually, from a candidate point of view, like, what is the expect? There she is, Ming Ho. How are you?
Hello. Good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Great. Just a heads up, I'm in a dentist because it took a little bit longer than I thought. So I just do it here.
Yeah. Right. Do you need, I mean, if you need to be like getting seen to, then don't worry about staying on the call.
No,
that's totally
probably
okay.
Probably later you'll see my tooth or something.
Yeah, are you okay? I mean, what's
Yeah, it's fine now. It's fine.
Okay, cool. Ming Ho, for the people who don't know you, can you just quickly introduce yourself to the audience, please?
Okay, sure. Yeah, so I'm a software developer in Lepaya, working in Lepaya right now, and it's based in Amsterdam. So basically, it's the same place as Ola.
Yeah.
And I've been working as a software developer for around 10 years, and most of my experience is in startups.
Yeah,
and
fantastic.
That's me.
You know what? That's actually a really interesting point, because is onboarding different according to size of company, scale of company? Of course it is. So that's something also we should explore. But let's look at a broader lens on this firstly, Ming Ho. Can you tell us from your experience as a candidate, you've been like a developer candidate, a person professional for 10 years or so, I believe. So you've been through a couple of times where you've been onboarded with a new company. Can you tell us what the difference between a good onboarding experience is compared to an onboarding experience that wasn't good?
Yeah, I would say the best situation is that there is the structured procedure, like what we have in the pool. Yeah, because I do run into a situation that the onboarding like process is not quite clear, and so I have to like push a little bit and ask like every a few days, and there's no like a definite date or a definite time that something would happen, and that makes me a little bit like panic. Even I've already got the offer, and also it includes a relocation. So everything, there are a lot of changes, but nothing is certain. I mean, nothing is already like done or something. So that would be something that would, if there's, yeah, hopefully there wouldn't be another time, yeah, like this. And so I think a structured process will be really like important to reduce the panic.
Yeah. On that note, Ming-Ho, I just want to just remind people, stress happens when it's ambiguous. Like if you don't know, that's when the stress happens. People aren't necessarily that bothered if it's 3 days, 5 days, 7 days. They're not counting the days per se. You just got to be clear what it is. If it's open-ended, you don't know when when you're going to get access to this bit of software that actually you need to get your job, or you don't know when you need to do this activity in order to trigger the next thing.
At some point, it will be dropped or something.
Right. You just think that's just like dangling people for no reason. So clear process. You've got to document it, basically. If you haven't got a documented and agreed onboarding process, then that's the first thing you need to have. Ideally, this should be public as well. Like, there's no reason why this should be hidden as a private internal document. Why do you not just say, look, this is how we onboard developers and have it up there as some place that everyone can look at? It's not proprietary information that's gonna, you know, bust your business in any way. It's just simply, this is how we do it. So, you know what I mean? Very easy and simple to do. Okay, give us another thing that's not good that you've experienced. You thought, okay, that was not a good experience. Next time they should really do this better.
Not good, another experience. I think this one is the most important one. And another one, I can see something that's good. Yeah, I can share something that's good. Yeah, just for some of the experience, some of them, not only the company side, but also the recruiter will help like making sure like every step happens. And if I have any questions, because so sometimes when, for example, I come from Asia, come from Taiwan, and the culture is very different from the culture in Europe or like in the Netherlands. So sometimes I do have some questions that what I can say, what I could ask, and what I should ask. And so at that point, the recruiter and also the company did help a lot. And they just be there and say, if you have any question, yeah, no problem, just come to us.
You know what? I think that's
really awesome.
That's a cultural sort of, there's cultural differences also, but I think there's also subcultural differences. So, you know, you might imagine some people don't like asking questions too much. I don't, you know, I feel like I don't want to be a problem. I don't want to add a burden to anyone, and I'm kind of trying to figure it out myself, and it's obviously wasting a huge amount of time. But I'd almost rather do that like instinctively rather than ask a question. So onboarding, the responsibility of the employer is to eliminate that situation where the person doesn't know and is afraid to ask for some reason. You need to provide the information and then ensure that is the person clear, and if not, please say, and then guide them all the way through. So that's a very important point, I think, to make. Give us one more thing, Ming-Ho, before we let you go. Sort of a great onboarding experience. You've had a few. So was there anything in particular, again, that you can say this is a really good example of how it made you feel when you were onboarded as a candidate?
Sorry, I think I lost a little bit.
Oh, yeah. So I was saying, hey, do you have another example of what a company could do to create a great onboarding experience for software people?
Okay. Another thing is another experience is that on the company side and also the recruiter side, they do it in a really cool way. They put the procedure in the Trello board. So it's open to me. I mean, I can access it. And so I know what's going on and what's happening, and is there any, because sometimes it's not the people involved, it's not only the employer, he or him, herself, also included probably the HR, or like probably include the founders, they have to sign something, or they have to figure out something, or figure out how to deal with the visa or something. And if they're having any question, any comments, they just leave it in the card, in Trello board.
Right.
And so I know what's everything's, yeah, what's happening right now and which step we're on. And is there any feedback we they need from me, or any information they need from me? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's also another, like, yeah, I have to say probably I'm a little bit lucky. So yeah, I did have a lot of like great experience on onboarding.
Well, you know what? You just introduced a really another interesting point, like transparency, right? I mean, and having a tool that's openly available where you haven't got a gate between, you know, HR can see this and, you know, the candidate can't or whatever, or the employee at that point can't. Like, make it available, make it public, default to public, I guess, is the mentality, especially when it isn't. You know, proprietary information, again, it's not private per se. You're sharing salary stuff, you just procedural stuff.
It won't harm the company, so
make it available, Trello board or any kind of public type of place, and you can just say to the candidate, look, we're going to update everything here, and if you're missing anything, say it so you can see it there and commentate on it, contribute to it, so that if there's any questions, that's super visible and anybody else can step in and support. So you share the load of it rather than having, let's say, you know, the example that Al and I were talking about. Old school, there'll be just a handover. So there'll be a recruiter, one person that you dealt with, that then hands the person over to, let's say, a HR person, who, by the way, also is handling like 500,000 other things. So you just become another bullet point on her or his or her never-ending checklist. And then there's an obvious like situation where things might get dropped there, you know, because it's locked in this bilateral relationship. Internally, there's no public documentation. The employee or the candidate, or, you know, the person who's in between candidate and employee, can't participate in the experience. They can't contribute to it or reflect back to it or whatever. And then it just loads on a huge amount of work. So, yeah, lots to learn, I think, on the startup side. Okay, listen, Mingho, I'm going to let you go because, you know, I keep interrupting you. Every time I bring you on, you're like, you're doing something more interesting than coming on to Brainfree Live. And I'm thinking, this girl needs to get on for a day, you know? But listen, good luck with the dentist. It's not my favorite place. I'm sure I'm sure whatever happens is going to be okay.
Thank you.
Great having you on the show. And yeah, we'll keep talking.
Thank you for having me.
No worries.
Yeah.
See you later, Mingho.
I actually wanted to ask a question to Mingho, but now if she's going, so I'm going to ask you, Han. Maybe, for a second.
Go ahead, yeah.
Okay. Mingho, how would you feel if the, let's say, the onboarding will be like a game? So you pass one step, so you give a badge or achievement, so you receive like a virtual cookie. So I saw that in a couple of companies, you know, this moment, like, you know, when my watch was sending me like, great job, you did so many steps. So this type of the going through the process and receiving the achievements, so how would you feel about it?
That would be awesome. In fact, that would be really like awesome for me. I mean, at least for me, and I'm not a game person, but I still feel like.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
And also some like, here's the humor.
Yep. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like it's kind of like encouragement. Yeah. And also feel like, okay, the company is with me, or like the recruiter is with me. And we're like trying to get to some point together. We're trying to make it together.
Yeah.
Really good. Yeah.
That's it. It's like a collaborative thing. It's a let's get there together. I totally love it. And actually, Tom, he's mentioned a very good thing. Like, I'd be very interested to know, does anybody, you know, use any gamification in the onboarding process? Because I do believe like a lot of administrative things can be made a lot better if they were gamified, right? If there was just some sort of reward as you go through, a sense of progress, you know, just a sense of something. And there's actually a lot of tooling that helps you do that. Onboarder, I think, is a product of Apical, aren't they? Onboarder, they're raising millions. So I think people care about it, and there's investment in these tools. So I'd love to hear whether anybody's actually using these tools. If so, give me a comment. Let me know what you think of them. And what is the reception from the candidates that go through it? Like, have your NPS scores improved? Because again, that's something I'd love to hear. Okay, Mingho, we're definitely gonna let you go. Get your teeth fixed up. We'll speak to you, soon, okay?
Yeah, see you later.
Bye.
You know what, it's just reminding me, I need to go visit a dentist. I haven't seen the dentist for like 18 months. Because I'm terrified of COVID-19 and I don't need somebody breathing on me as, you know, we're in the middle of this pandemic, but you know, I'm eating a lot of sugar these days and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, at some point I'll have to do something, you know.
It's gonna be fine.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, folks, anybody listening, if you've got any questions for any of the guests or Allo or anybody else, ask a question at the bottom. We're gonna get to that at the end of the show. Okay, super interesting. And by the way, the gaming thing, I definitely wanna talk a little bit more on. We're gonna go and flip it a little bit because I wanna bring in some hiring managers and get their perspective. And the reason why this is important is because I think a technical manager obviously has been a candidate, maybe even recently a candidate themselves, so they could commentate on their own onboarding experience. But as a leader of a department, I wonder what their thoughts are and what they could do if they could redesign an onboarding process for optimal efficiency and comfort for a person coming in. So let's see whether we can bring on Jesse and Joshua. I think they're both there. Yes, he is. Let's go, Joshua. And I'm going to try and bring Jesse on as well. There's Jesse. Cool. Great. You know, I'm going to sneeze at some point. I hope that's okay. I have to mute myself. Make everyone deaf. But no, you talk about gamification. I'm thinking things like taxation. So no one loves filling in tax, right? It's like the worst thing ever. And I'm thinking, you know what, if they just made some sort of like decent progress bar or something, I would feel a lot more comfortable with that. Okay, we actually have four people on screen. Amazing. So let's do some intros. Jesse, let's intro you first. Who are you and what do you do?
Hi, so I'm Jesse Edison. I'm engineering manager at Ecosia. And I joined that company. So Ecosia is the, maybe you know it, it's the web browser which plants trees. We use the money we get from your research and we help reforestation around the world. I joined Ecosia last March at the beginning of the lockdown. And so that's also an interesting topic for onboarding, doing the switch. And before that, I've been QA, software QA engineer for more than 10 years. So I was also on the other side of the developer side of being onboarded. So yeah.
That's great. Nice. Welcome to the show, Jesse. Great, great to see you. And Joshua, great, welcome back to the show. For the folks who don't know you, Joshua, quickly, can you introduce yourself, who you are and what it is you do?
Sure. So Joshua Hoffman, and originally got my start as a system and software engineer and kind of worked my way up, spent about 10 years at Red Hat, ended up getting into engineering leadership. And now I've been working at several startups, formerly of Tumblr in the early days, as well as SoundCloud, and then came to Amsterdam and working for a few Dutch startups. I'm currently the CTO at Blendl, and we're basically like a Spotify for journalism, although it's already public, so this isn't a unique announcement to share, but we've been acquired recently, and so the new management team comes in from the acquisition team, so I'll be looking for something new soon.
Amazing. Well done on taking the business to that point and supporting that journey, Joshua. Okay, so let's get our kind of developer hats on first. So I want both of you to think of your last time you were a candidate and you got onboarded. Was there anything that was conspicuously good or bad about that experience? And we're not here to throw an employer under the bus here, by the way. We're not here to say, you know, terrible things. But was there anything that caused you to stop as a candidate and think, okay, this is ambiguous. I'm not sure what to do. That sort of sense. Let's go to you, Jesse, first, seeing as, you know, it's actually been quite recent, right? You're just a year ago, I guess, anniversary coming up. Onboarding, what were your thoughts? I mean, what could have been improved? What were the things that you found there?
I was nicely surprised, in fact, by the onboarding I had at Ecosia. We had a session with every new member that joined at the same time as me, and we got a presentation of the company, of how the company was organized, the different departments. So honestly, I really don't have a lot to say negative about this onboarding. That was one of the best I've experienced, in fact, so far. I never felt alone at any point of time. I had what we call a buddy, so someone I could go to if I had any question, which happened to be my N+1. But for our engineers, we have someone who is working with them. But in my case, my role is totally new, was totally new at Ecosia. So this was also something which is kind of special because I was onboarding on a new role that I was supposed to shape with my colleague and my N+1. So this is obviously a bit more different because we are trying to, while onboarding, trying to uncover what we needed to do, in fact. But I always had someone I could go to from the people team with my manager and even my colleague who started the same day as me. That was really, again, one of the best onboarding I had. So
some interesting points to raise there, though, because some of the characteristics of this good onboarding experience might be universal in the sense you mentioned you never felt alone. And I think that's a really important thing to sit on just a little bit, because as a new person coming into a company, it is like the new kid in school, right? It's like, of course you're alone. Everyone else has all of this institutional knowledge. Everyone else has these pre-built social relationships. You're just like literally coming in out of nowhere. And that's a scary moment. And that sense of being alone, we need to ameliorate that. And it seems that one of the techniques that Ecosia used was, let's kind of get all of people onboarded similarly at the same time. So you have a collegiate experience. You're not just going in by yourself. So instead of the new kid at school, it's no, you've got a new class like of people coming in together. And then you mentioned there was opportunities to buddy up with an existing person. So there was an individual identified to say, right, this person is a go-to for these types of things. And presumably that person was happy to do that. So a couple of elements, I think that emotional security, right? I mean, we forget we're human beings. The emotional security is required. We need to fill that gap. Okay, great. Let's go to you, Joshua. I'm going to change the question a little bit because I appreciate sometimes we can learn as much from a good experience as we can from a bad. And it's just about flipping the switch a little bit. Has there been any kind of conspicuous things in your experience as a candidate where you thought this was good or this was bad?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And, you know, I've interviewed and onboarded at several companies of all different sizes. And oddly enough, I think my worst and best onboarding experiences or close to it were actually at the same company. So Red Hat, I worked for twice. And in the first time I worked there, I had been working as a freelancer for them for a little while. And they put a lot of effort, do a great onboarding program. But the person who recruited me in made a little mistake and just assumed, because I had been doing the job as a freelancer, that I didn't need any onboarding at all. And so it literally was, you know, I was working remote in the field. I got a contract in the mail. I signed it, sent it back. I got a little package a week later, you know, welcome to the team. Here's a sweatshirt and, you know, I don't know, a mouse pad, whatever, and good luck. And then I had, you know, a set of assignments I was to take on. And after a couple of weeks, I realized that I just didn't know some things that as a freelancer, it's one way, for example, submitting your expenses for your travel to visit your clients, things like that. And as an employee, it's completely different. And I remember I called up my manager and I said, yeah, I just have a couple of questions. And I read him this list. How do I do it? And he said, oh, wow, we really dropped the ball on you. He said, we just assume you're doing the job well, so it will continue the same way. And I said, well, thank you. So then I actually got through the formal onboarding. And they did some really great stuff with it. The question came up about gamification. And at Red Hat, part of the onboarding actually included a game. And I really liked the way that they did it. So they didn't gamify the whole process, but as part of it, they brought everyone to headquarters and you're in a group and they pair you up with the person that they think has the most different job than you. So for example, if you're coming in there as an engineering consultant, they might pair you up with someone from a finance team or, you know, maybe someone from HR, whatever, just some completely different department. And they have you form these little pairs. And then they gave us this game, which was sort of like a scavenger hunt. That required you to, over the course of the next 3 days in between your onboarding sessions, go all around the company, find people to talk to. If you had cryptic clues, you know, what does it mean when someone says this? And it's like this, you know, internal company jargon that you need to get the answer. But you could probably ask anyone. So it just forced you to get out and meet people and see different parts of the building you might never go to. And because your partner is someone in a very different department, you're also getting to know them and you're exploring it together. And it was a lot of fun. And at the end, there was a prize for the ones who finished it first, which I'm happy to say was my team. although I had an unfair advantage, having been a freelancer, I did have a lot of insider knowledge already. But I thought that really brought something to it. And I liked the way that it challenged you in ways to get social with the company, not just, most companies, they'll have their kind of like their onboarding Bible, and it tells you, you know, here's where you get your mail, and here's who, supplies your equipment and what you need to log into and all of this. And you squirrel that away, and that's really practical, but it doesn't give you a social connection in the same way. So I really like that they brought that. Another very positive experience I had was onboarding at SoundCloud. And this, I think, when you're doing an international transfer as well, so you're bringing someone from another country who not only, as some of the things were mentioned, you have to learn a new language, or at least to some degree, and this was coming to Germany, so that meant visiting, you know, the office to register as a taxpayer and to get into all these different things. And they made it so smooth because the person who did the recruiting, there was a handoff, but there was a lot of overlap with the next person who was like the sort of relocation and onboarding specialist. So you had both of these people for a little while. And by the time you then handed over to focus with the onboarding specialist, you had a good connection with him. It was nice. And he did everything. He really made it feel personal. So he took me to those, you know, like tax office and registration visits. He took me and helped me find an apartment. Of course, he spoke fluent German, so that made it a lot easier to get around is when you're first there. You're not sure what's happening. And that was huge, that really personal touch that, you know, made me feel immediately supported and connected to the company. And then they already give you a social calendar saying, okay, well, you're new to town, you're new to this country. Here's all the events that we've organized with all the other new people. So you immediately have stuff to do. And again, you're connecting with your colleagues. And I thought that was really great.
You know what? That's some amazing stories there, Joshua. What wonderful sort of ideas. And I'm going to forget some of these, so please help me out, everyone else who's listening. But there's a few things I want to touch on. Firstly, when you're making a big move, international transfers, stuff like that, you need concierge treatment. Like you cannot just treat that person as if they've just switched jobs in local scenarios. You've got to just be all over it. Visiting a tax office, I can't imagine anything more terrifying. Going to a new country where the language you don't know, you have no idea of the tax code, and you've got to speak to somebody there. Horrible. That you need someone literally. I want someone to hold my hand all the way through. Never let go of my hand. Right, as we go to do that. So concierge treatment. Second thing, both you mentioned actually, Jesse and Joshua, you mentioned that sometimes it's great to have like multiple people onboarding at the same time. So there's an insight there that I think it's important for us to recognize, because when you're recruiting one person at a time, which sometimes you do, obviously you don't have the opportunity to onboard with another person. And we might need a different onboarding approach with that individual compared to if you're onboarding a cohort. So I wonder whether the recruiters in the watching this actually have thought about this, whether you have a varied onboarding process. I think probably not. The chances are you've universalized it and you thought, right, everyone goes through the same pipe. But in fact, no. An individual person going through that pipe actually might have a very different experience for someone who's part of a group who's joining at the time, because they wouldn't have the opportunity of doing a scavenger hunt in a pair. There's a reason why you were in a team there, Joshua, right? I would imagine it would have been really a different experience if you were on your own. Again, another thing I would find terrifying to try and do. So an important revelation there. Okay, cool. There's one more thing that you talked about that I totally forgot, but hopefully it will come to me. Torin Ellis, actually. Hi, Torin. He's mentioned a really interesting point. Some of these ideas are great, folks, but they're also in person, right? They're also, hey, on-premise. And in fact, maybe the reason why the on-premise argument is still there is you can have this onboarding experience. We're all distributed, all remote. Scavenger hunt, is that doable? Can we team up and pair up in the same way? Are we going to socialize in the same way? What are your thoughts? I mean, I'll open that up to everyone here.
So
yeah, I think it's, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. So how we handled it at Ecosia is obviously doing this. So the BD system, we also have one from the company who is not from our department, not from engineering, to make sure that the new person joining is also pairing with someone outside of our department so they can connect. And we have several events, so they can connect with people during the presentation of the different department, obviously. And we have also every quarter, at least in engineering, what we call the DevOps site, which is kind of a hackathon where people can be spread, not just in their team, but working with people from other teams. And we have a lot of activities together that we do online, so we can play games. We have some, so we had one time we are playing different we're separating everyone in group of four, and they had to come up with an idea of a picture to take together from afar. So we are trying to still having this type of activities, but we have to obviously translate them in an virtual context. So yeah, again, the idea is to make sure that they can still connect and still bond with their colleagues, even if they can't do that together. And I just wanted to go for the scavenger hunt. It's something I did in the past in a previous company. As someone who is pretty introvert, that was a nightmare for me. I hated being forced to go to every single person to ask, because in our case, we needed to get from the people like a signature, and I had to go to every one of them. And even with Pear, it was really difficult. And I think that you need also to cater for different type of personalities.
That's actually something we need to talk about as well, because how do you vary it according to different people's situations? So we're talking, this is an inclusion, right? An attempt to be very inclusive in your onboarding. Again, a universalized approach may be efficient, and you know, it may on the one hand be attractive, but you have to think, look, it's not going to be great for everybody. Is there another way in which you could provide a similar kind of emotional support, emotional impact? Okay, the thing I forgot to mention, but I'll bring it back up now, is this idea of buddying up with someone outside of the department. I love this idea. Is it common? I mean, folks, you're watching this right now. I mean, is this what you do if you have a buddy system? Is it sort of outside of your department? Do you partner marketing up with HR, for instance, or whatever, in order to get that vibe? Or is this kind of just very specific maybe to these startup companies that have this type of situation? I'd love to hear your comments on that. Go ahead, Ala.
Yeah, I just added the link to the app that is quite popular on the Slack directory. It's called the Donut. So you just pair with anyone. I use it in the community, especially for the new members. This is kind of alternative for the virtual step, to make a virtual step to each other when you don't know anyone. So I just shared it, guys. If you haven't seen it, I think it's free. So that's
can you explain this, Ala? So essentially, I will join this, and basically, let's say I'm joining a company, everyone else would be on there, and it would randomly match me with somebody, and that we would have to buddy up and would have to do something.
Yeah, you can randomly match it, but you can also point to give some direction how it's going to be matched. So mm-hmm. At the beginning, usually people match it randomly so that the person can get to this in the way naturally how it goes. But yeah, you can actually kind of make it as an onboarding. So first you can create in the chat welcome message. So anytime a new person is joining the chat, so the channel, mm-hmm. So it's like, welcome. And then you get the notification, hey, you have a buddy to have a virtual coffee. So I think quite a lot of people use that because again, it's free, it's easy to get. And as well as we spend a lot of time in, you know, this messengers. So could be a good thing.
That's a great share. And it looks like a lot of people are familiar with it, or they're using it sort of themselves. So that's fantastic. Okay, let's switch our hats on to, like, you're a hiring manager now, and you've gone through a process. Have you thought about, like, how to improve an existing onboarding scenario. So again, yes, we care about the emotional security of the candidate, of the employee, et cetera. But as a hiring manager, another priority that you have is to say minimum disruption of the existing team. You want productivity of the new hire ASAP. You've got other targets you need to achieve. You know, you can't be in a situation where hiring someone new actually pulls you back. It needs to be forward. So what are your thoughts on that? I mean, have you designed something like this? Has it been more like HR or recruiting has possessed it and you weren't able to get in there? Thoughts on this, you two?
Yeah, I think it's, as a hiring manager, I've many times modified, you know, ideally improved, enhanced the onboarding experience, because I think you hit the nail on the head. There is, of course, the social and emotional aspect, but then you also want your engineers to be productive as quickly as possible within a reasonable amount of time. And I've seen companies that have really formal training where, you know, you've got a Facebook, I think you spend a month in a boot camp before you even figure out what team you're on. You know, it's nice if you can do that, but most startups and scale-ups don't have the time or the budget to be able to put you, you know, not working for a month or something like this. And I've seen the other approach, which I think is the opposite end of the spectrum, where you will have the person ideally be set up and make a code commit on their first day, right? So like these are really opposite ends of the spectrum. And depending on how things work in your organization, I think either one can make sense. Where I look and have stepped in is that, number one, if you're a hiring manager, and you haven't been through the individual engineer onboarding, you need to go through it yourself just to see what it is you're subjecting people to, because you can't be thoughtful about it. And then you need to check in on people as well. You know, so after they've gone through your onboarding, that's supposed to really give them everything they need. You got to have a one-on-one and ask them, how did it go? You know, do you have more questions? Do you feel empowered? Are you able to get your work done today? You know, what does that look like? I think that having a buddy outside the team is really good. Where I see the biggest gap and where I've worked to improve things is what I call the area of tribal knowledge, right? So a lot of companies have very well-established handbooks that tell you, you know, this is the department that does that. And if you need someone, you go to this other team and whatever. And then you get to your team and they've told you day one, here's a checklist of tools to install, get your laptop set up, you're ready to go. And then you just run into these weird little brick walls and you turn to the teammate next to you or you jump in a chat room. Hey, how do I get access to this system? I'm trying to do a, you know, a merge and I'm getting this weird error. And oh, yeah, it's not in the onboarding, but you need to go over here and request the password from this guy. And he's the only one who can set it up and, you know, whatever. And all these little things that make an employee really feel like they're guessing every day until they get, you know, get their head around it. And the things that I used to do in the past is I would take the new person that came in after I had joined the org and say, okay, I have a special task for you. It's an extra. I want you to keep a list of all the things we missed during the onboarding that you had to get either from a teammate or whatever that just wasn't documented. And again, I call this the tribal knowledge. And that turned out to be a terrible strategy because
I thought it was a great strategy. Just, hey,
you know, it seemed like it should be, right? But it never came through with very good results because by the time the person was getting productive and ready to go, they really hadn't kept great notes. It was blurry in their mind what they had picked up, you know, tribally versus what was in documentation. And so I honestly think that the way you close that gap is you go through it yourself, right? If you're an engineering manager, there's absolutely no reason you shouldn't be set up to do the same work that the engineers are doing. In fact, I would argue you really need to have the same environment and go through the process. You can understand, you know, where are the pain points in joining this team and where are the pain points in working on this team. But, you know, that's another story. And then you got to add to the documentation. So I would say crushing tribal knowledge is probably the biggest thing. And that's going to be team by team. And so I tend to take a two-tiered approach. You have the sort of general onboarding that's good for everyone in the company. And then each team is responsible to produce their own onboarding program as well that is specific to that team. And that's where we're really going to look to capture that tribal knowledge and make sure it's documented somewhere. And if you have someone that's interested, you could even, you know, name an onboarding captain on the team that's responsible to kind of take the handoff from the general onboarding. But I think the more you can kind of document, put down, and make it easier for people to find, it's just smoother to get started. And so having a weird challenge, like be ready to make a commit on your first day, that sort of forces the issue, right? But it also might mean that you take one or two people off a team and they lose an entire day of work because they spend the whole day next to this person getting them set up and teaching them stuff that isn't really well documented. So you really got to look at the details.
You know what? I just want to step in there because I love this idea of it's almost like embracing that there's subliminal knowledge, cultural knowledge in the business that no one's ever written down, that everyone's learned as a result of the across the desk or either through the chat. Someone's like passed that info down. There's maybe no central record of truth on it, but there should be. We need to expose it, and you need to somehow, like, as soon as that thing has that information exchange has occurred, it needs to be collected and it needs to go to a central repository so that it could be found and team gets more efficient over time. So I think just the recognition that we haven't collected or captured all the information itself is step one on that. Fantastic stuff. Okay, cool. What are your thoughts on improving stuff, Jesse? Things that you thought, okay, that was okay, but I'm going to make it plus one.
So I remember, in fact, when I applied for Ecosia, the last exercise I had was to facilitate a workshop with the development team on how to improve their onboarding process. So that was literally the first task I had to do even before being in the company. And one of the things that I remember clearly was that, so as I was saying, we have buddy outside of the department, but we also have a buddy inside the team who can be the go-to person. And one of the things which was missing is training the buddy on how to be a buddy, how to onboard someone, how to train them, mentor them when they start. So that's one of the first things that we started to discuss also when I joined, how we can support the team members when we have new engineers on helping them setting up their environments, being available to talk to them, being also conscious about diversity and adapting their communication to the type of communication that the other person responds the most to. So that was one of the things that we talked about. On improving things, I remember that in every company that I've been, I already started this document on what is missing. And I always had this welcome guide that I created with all this information that we were saying that people know, but it's never been written down. So I always try to compute that in the document. So the next person would be joining would not have to face this, the same issue and the same questions. And that's kind of the same philosophy we have at Ecosia. We already have this type of documents. It's on GitHub for our developers, so they can go there. And they are asked every time they see something which is missing, not to wait for a meeting that we will have at the end of the onboarding, but already do their pull request and do the change themselves because they are the best one who knows what is missing. So this is a way to empower them. So they can say, yeah, I did my first PR, even if it's just for documentation. It also helps them go through the process of doing a pull request. So it's also, you know, we're learning also how we work at Ecosia when we do a pull request with the code review, etc. And at the same time, it also ensures that we keep our documentation updated because the company still grow, we still change some stuff. So obviously keeping updated this type of documents can be cumbersome. And the new joiner are the most, even if I do the onboarding process once, I can assure you that in 2 months, it might not be valid anymore, at least for some of the tools we are using. So it's better to have this work done by someone who is new, who already know what is missing, and we can learn from it. And we're sure that the documents are always up to date.
Yeah, so basically the new person comes in almost as a person who's going to update the currency of the documentation. Because as you say, as soon as you document something, you've frozen it in time and things move on. So this person may have this update role, or at least you've got to create some sort of way in which that can happen. Although, Joshua, I totally take your point as well earlier when you say that, sometimes the new person may lack the cultural knowledge to such an extent that they're not able to commentate on what is good or bad because they're simply not able to judge. It's like, okay, this is how they do it. They also, I would imagine a new employee coming in, a good new employee, I would imagine, is not coming in with like a completely fixed approach. Like they should be open to how new companies do things. So they may not actually recognize a bad process because they may just say, oh, that's how a coaster do it. And they don't realize it's actually a break in the system. So it's quite interesting to know or to figure out like exactly how you get that the value from that circumstance, but super interesting. Okay, listen, we're running short on time already. I wanna just ask one quick question to shift it to the next topic. So I think we need to cover it. We'll shift to remote. Onboarding, I think is like, it was born on the idea of on-premise. So if we're now in a situation where we're remote and in future, let's imagine that's the permanent state, what do you think are the most important things to know about remote onboarding that is different from on-premise? Go to you, Joshua, first.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And the fact that we've now had almost, you know, a year of experience in doing everything remote, I think, you know, if you had asked me this last year, I would probably not have a great answer. But a couple of things come to mind first is that a lot of, or at least a good portion of on-premise onboarding is also about learning the building. Right. If you're in a very small startup, you know, okay, it's you can all look around and see where the toilets are, and that's fine. But if you're joining a larger company where it's a big building with a lot going on, just learning where the things are in the building, where your team sits, where you get lunch, where you know all of this stuff is just part of that onboarding. And at least you can throw all that away when you're doing it remote, right? So you don't have to worry about that portion of it. I think the biggest thing to be sensitive to with remote onboarding is that there's a feeling of loneliness. Right, because even if you've been added to a Slack and you've got a regular team stand up, you're brand new, and you don't know anyone, and it's not like you can overhear a conversation next to you where someone's talking about Arduinos. Oh, I like Arduinos. I'll introduce myself and see who this is, and maybe I can talk to them and you know just form a friendship that way. So I think it requires the company to be much more proactive. Right, you have to assign activities. You have to reach out, check in multiple times a day, at least the first few days. Make sure that you've got stuff set up. I really like the idea of the coffee chat, but what I don't like is if you just say, "Okay, I'm going to randomly assign you to someone, and you're going to have a half-hour coffee chat." You know, for someone like myself, very comfortable, can probably have an engaging conversation. But for that introvert, and or especially if there's two of them, you might just be staring at each other. You know. So I like to do it with, and something we do at Blendl is we seed the conversation. So we give like three questions. Say, have a coffee chat and discuss these three questions and answer them together. And then we actually take it a step further and we'd like you to write the other's answers. And then we'll have a group meeting later where you present the answers of the other that you were with. And this way it shows that you got to know that person a little bit and you're practicing a bit of public speaking and you're just sort of becoming part of the group. I think these kind of little changes and tweaks help a lot in the remote situation.
That's a great, great little exercise to run. So just to repeat that for folks who are listening, you do a connection in the company, but you seed the conversation. You just don't let them do it. You just give a bit of structure to it and a bit of an exercise. So it's kind of a neutral space where both parties can focus on. So you're not just like, you know, face to face where that may favor, you know, a certain type of neurotype compared to another. And then they have to reflect back to the wider group. And again, as you say, there's all kinds of like personal and career development things that you're going to learn by doing that, but you'll also be enculturated at the same time. Okay, go to you on this, Jesse. A shift to remote, everyone's remote. How does it change on onboarding?
It kind of changed. Well, that's a good question. I was onboarded live, and I had to do remote onboarding. We had several trials, and I agree that this feeling of loneliness is really something that we try to tackle right away. So what we do is we send an email away like 1 week before the person joins, so they are already in touch with their buddies, so the company buddies and the team buddies, so they can already start to build a relationship together. If they have questions, If they are afraid of their first day, which is totally normal, they know who to go to even before joining the company. And we also give the planning of the first day so they can start confident and knowing that they will meet people at what time, how, where, online. And I feel like it kind of helps of not feeling like totally lost, like, the first trial, for sure, I'm pretty sure that our engineer came and were like, okay, it's 9 a.m. I don't know who I'm supposed to talk to. And we realized that having like a bit more structure and making that clear really helped. And for example, me, so the person will have their general onboarding with other people. And then they will meet me. They will meet me and we will talk. And after I will introduce them because it happened that we have to stand up right in the morning, and then we introduce them to the whole team so they are not alone. They already are meeting everyone else in the team so they can already see faces, they can already start to connect, and after their buddy will meet them in a separate meeting where they will continue to talk and go through all the first steps of onboarding. And we try to have check-ins every day with the person, every evening, and me once a week, and regularly with the buddies as well, so they are also not feeling alone in their role.
Yeah, so that's basically the vibe I'm getting from both of you is that we just need to intensify this idea of socialization for new starters, because there's a lot of that ambient socialization they're not going to get. The simple fact of bumping into people as they're going to the coffee machine or something, there's an opportunity to socialize, doesn't exist anymore in this online world. So we need to amp it up and do so in different ways. You know what, there's going to be some really cool products built to support this, isn't there? I mean, I can just imagine, I mean, we're talking about AR, VR, I'm a critic of it, even though I've got an Oculus right here, big fan of the damn thing. But from a work point of view, very difficult because no one's going to be walking around with that thing on your head all the time. But I can imagine gaming generally being very useful for this, just in the sense that if you're able to play a game somehow on an alt space, but everyone else is in there and you can do stuff that may be work related or whatever, but it's like a little bit of a replication of this idea of being in building, you're in a different space together, rather than just staring at a screen. And you know, I think the overall consciousness of a new person coming in is just, I don't want to be a burden, I want to be a plus one, a day one. You know, that type of sense is also a huge thing. So, you know, there's going to be some very interesting tech products emerging from this. Okay, Ala, do you want to say something? Because otherwise we need to jump into these questions here.
Yeah, sure. I actually wanted to ask a question to Joshua. One of the things that I've noticed that in the interview process, we ask candidates to complete the assignments or complete some personality tests, and then we have quite a good data in there. And I wonder if you can, if you do use this information from the interview process, the results of these assignments in the onboarding.
We do use sometimes the results of the assignments, just because it's given some window into where the person is really strong and where they might have their first growth and learning opportunities. So that can help you set up what you're going to do there. I'll be honest with you, it might be controversial, but I'm not a big fan of personality tests. Mm-hmm. Because I think that they can be problematic. They can be interesting and fun. But you know, I don't like to force people to do that. But I do think, to your point about gaming, and you know, this is why having that overlap between the recruiter and sort of the onboarder, the HR person that welcomes them, allows that kind of handoff. Because when you could say something personal like, you know, this is Ala, she's awesome, and she's really into knitting, so make sure whoever on the team is into knitting meets her and they can exchange tips or, you know, things like that. These little things, I think, are really great just to personalize it a little bit more. Hung, I did want to touch on one thing. You talked about games and products coming out. There's a game that we have used. It's not meant for this. It's just a game, but it's called Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes. And what it is it's a game that really helps you build strong communication under stressful situations. The only stress comes from the game, but you split into two groups. So it can be two people or it can be two teams or however you want to do it. I'll just tell you really quick. But one side is faced with a bomb and no instructions, and they have a set timer to defuse the bomb. The other side has all the instructions, but they can't see the bomb. So they must communicate back and forth under time pressure to be able to do. And we use this originally as a sort of team building exercise to learn how to handle on-call situations when things go wrong and you need help. But it translates perfectly to do remotely as well, just to build that sort of connection and team communication.
That's it. We need to embrace the online world, folks. You know, literally get into gaming. You have to do it because it's so much socialization that does take place. The gamers themselves, I think, are super social people in this environment. But we're addressing typically an audience of people that I think are missing this gap. And they're thinking, oh, I've lost my socialization opportunities. There's a ton of it on there in gaming. So get into it. Okay, cool. What else do we need to say? We need to answer the questions, folks. So let's get into that. I think, Ala, you've already answered the first one from Shannon, so I'm going to skip that one. Let's just do one from Tom. Tom Bolt has said, ask the question, how can onboarding remotely be continuous instead of a one-time event? That's quite an interesting concept. Any thoughts on that, anybody?
I think one of the things you can do is to make it continuous is the most recent onboarded person should be involved with the next newest person. So you sort of build the skills and roll into it. And because I also think, I think it's pretty well established when you have to teach someone else something, you really have to have it solid. And so by asking you to step in and help with the onboarding of the next person, you may be sharing knowledge you just picked up. And so you're really going to have to make sure you've got it right when you share it with this person. And then it also helps people feel like they're becoming more of the team if they're already helping the new person. So I think that could help. But, you know, I think it should just smoothly transition into your learning and growth journey.
Yeah.
Right? 'Cause you don't meet anyone these days who applies for a job at your company and said, hey, my skills are here. That's all I want to know. And I'm going to deliver for you. And I never want to learn anything new. It's obviously the opposite, right? Everyone wants to constantly learn new skills. So I think that's the opportunity you have to connect that to onboarding, to that it just becomes a continuous journey. And, you know, I always tell people on their first day, I expect everyone to come in equally willing to teach or to learn, right? Because we're never going to stop learning. But in order to make that work, we all have to be willing to teach now and then.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic answer. And also something that is, you know, very true. Once you give someone the opportunity to teach another, they feel inflated, they feel more confident themselves, they feel like I'm actually helping somebody, you know, and then they are, and that just builds them as a team member. So really good example. Okay, a final question here. This is from Lee Candiotti. Thank you, Lee, for this. Jesse, you can take this one. I'm sorry, I'll apologize in advance for this. He's saying, okay, the gamification, should it actually just be additional income? Like, for instance, I'm going to gamify the onboarding process for you, but rather than me give you an online cookie, should I just give you like material benefit?
At Ecosia, we would go for then we can make a donation in your name for an association or plant a tree or so. That would be the way we will remunerate people, because everyone who's joining our company are really into this type of thing. So that makes the most sense.
Jesse, that's a brilliant idea. And I tell you, that's a fantastic idea we can implement tomorrow. Anybody can do this. Gamify it by having a donation budget. As the person goes through, you're going to say, we're going to plant a tree, or we're going to do this if you go through. And then boom, everyone's motivated to do that. And obviously only hire people that care about trees. That's about it, folks. We're out of time. I just want to thank Joshua Hoffman. Thank you very much for joining us again for this show. Jesse, I'm gonna get your name wrong. Jesse Hallison, thank you for so much for joining the show here. Quickly, Jesse, you're gonna come back for us in a couple of weeks for another show. Joshua, I'd love to get you back as well at some other point. You've been great guests for us. And finally, you mentioned one thing, Joshua, before I let you go. You mentioned actually with the takeover of the business, you will actually be looking for your next opportunity. In what time frame, Joshua?
I'm open to opportunities now. I will be wrapping things up in my current role at the end of the month.
Cool. Well, get in touch with Joshua if you're hiring for a CTO or a technical leader of some sort. I'll make sure everyone has everyone's LinkedIn links in the email to follow up. Okay, that's about it. Joshua and Jesse, thank you so much for your time. We're going to say goodbye to these two lovely people. And that's the end of the show, really. So thank you, everyone, for joining. I hope you've enjoyed Brainfood Live on Air. I've had a blast with from a developer's point of view. I'm very keen to do another point of view thing. I'm thinking let's do a CEO point of view or something like that. Or, you know, who else do recruiters interact with that we never actually hear real talk from? You know, I mean, typically we did it from the candidate side here, but who else are our stakeholders? You know, maybe we should talk to like HRD or something like that. Or, you know, do we talk to in-house agency type relationship? I don't know. Give me some thoughts, folks. If you want us to pursue like another from point of view type of thing, then let us know. And in fact, what person and what category of person you need for us to be aware of. Okay, that's about it. We're back next week on Friday again. I forget what the topic is. It's going to be amazing. But sign up, follow the channel. It would, if you like this type of content, have a good weekend, everybody. We'll see you later.
Thank you, okay. Everyone. Such a great topic.
So That's it. Okay, so Ala, thank you so much, by the way, for stepping in at last minute. Really cool. I know you watch the show anyway, but I do appreciate you stepping in, right? Because it's not an easy thing to just stick on a headset and come on. And that's wonderful. We'll definitely get you back as what was co-host like? Do you enjoy?
I like it that way, and you know, and gamification. So I think this topic touched people so much. So I think that's gonna be something that we can also talk a little bit more.
We should do a game. We should do a brain food group that plays games.
Yes, I play so many games right now.
So you can teach me because I don't, and I want to learn. But I'm such a newbie. I'm one of these problems. I think I'm deeply ashamed. I always want to be like competent at everything I do, and obviously I'm going to be terrible at the start. So like I avoid that. So what game do I need to play that is like a social game that people can get involved with? Good for brain food. Any ideas?
Yeah, I mean, that's not sure about the good for brain food, but this is about the competitive funny game that is super popular right now. I'll share the link. It's like, it's called Among Us. So I'm going to share the link again. So basically, it's like a mafia, but you have your colleagues and you have to pick off from the plane the person who is actually mafia. So I love it.
I have heard so much about Among Us. We're going to do a brain food Among Us on Twitch or something like that, right?
That's gonna, I think, be it's gonna be fun.
Let's do it. All right, listen, that's about it. Ali, you have a very good weekend. Thanks, everybody. Thank you. You take care of yourself, okay?
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
That's it, folks. End of the show. See you next week. Thanks for watching.